number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime is the right time.
On the nighttime,
it's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, the Cleveland Browns and Johnny Manziel are kind of at an impasse, right? We know that. How dire is it for Johnny Manziel? We're going to talk to Mark Passwater. He's coming up in 30 minutes from Aggieyell.com. We're going to ask him about Von Miller, who's the Super Bowl MVP, also a Texas A&M Aggie. But then kind of get into Manziel and what's wrong? What's the matter? Now, I know a lot of you out there may have the attitude of, ah, who cares? He's a spoiled brat. We are watching right in front of us as a sports viewing public. We are watching the utter destruction, the self-destruction of a young athlete, of a young, big-time superstar athlete from the college game to the pros, nothing more than self-destructive behavior. Whether it's laziness, whether it's inability to work hard, whatever it is, he is self-destructing everything around him. He's in trouble with the law on this domestic abuse allegation where he hit his girlfriend, busted her eardrum. His father doesn't think he's going to live past 24 if he doesn't get help. He refused to check himself into rehab. We are watching the destruction of a guy that had the world in the palm of his hand. Go back. I mean, you don't, again, this is not a 35-year-old guy that we have to go back 10, 12 years for. I mean, it was only, what, 4 years ago? Three, 4 years ago? Where he was rolling through college? And he became, for a lot of people, especially a lot of young guys, there was a life you wanted to live vicariously through Johnny Manziel. He was partying. He had women and fame. He had the world in the palm of his hands, and he had success. He had football success. He was building a legacy. And he had all the naysayers who at the draft, who's not John Gruden, but a number of naysayers who were wondering, why would anybody take this guy in the first round? Oh, sure, maybe a third round flyer, but certainly not a first round pick. He gets drafted by Cleveland. The jerseys are flying off the shelves. He's got a coach that doesn't believe in him. And instead of trying to get that coach to believe in him, it starts to spiral out of control. Lies start being built up. Then the next thing you know, people are taking pictures of him. He's going through Vegas in a disguise. It is the start of a downward spiral. And let me say this. I am not a Johnny Manziel super fan and all of that. I am a guy that genuinely cares when somebody is ruining not only their career, but their life. I really do. I don't want to see this. I don't want to hear about Johnny Manziel dead in an alley because nobody cared and he felt like life was over. But I can't get behind anything he does with this domestic violence charge leveled against him. I can't wish him well. I can't hope for the best. None of that until this is resolved, not only by law enforcement, but by the league. We have to at least be consistent on this. Because he is completely and utterly out of control. And nobody is to blame but him. But I do hope that there is an intervention. Because in the end, I think it's a sad tale. But if there isn't an intervention, and this is just the way he spirals out of control, well, then we are going to move on and we are going to say, forget it. And he then becomes a where are they now segment. And it could be jail. It could be homeless. It could be successful businessman at 30 years old. I don't know. But there's a lot more to Johnny Manziel's life than football right now. He's dealing with a serious charge. And look, the league, We've been asking the league to crack down on this. We've been asking the league to make a statement on this. And I hope they do this. He does not need to be suspended and right back to football. He really needs to be suspended and into rehab or something. Because it is simply not going to work. And man, it's like I said, it's too bad because I was at least looking forward to see exactly what he could do in this league, given a starting job, a year of figuring himself out in this league, a year of learning on the ropes, finding out what works, finding out what doesn't work, trying to adjust his game. I believed for a while that he would have some success for a little bit of time, then he was going to disappear. His game is not long term. His game is not built to be a 18-year career type of thing. No, his game is meant to sort of pop for a bit, have some success, everyone gets excited, it starts to fall apart, defense start to figure out, and then you kind of hang around the league a little bit, maybe as a backup guy or starter somewhere else, and you become a little bit of a journeyman when your game gets more and more exposed. That was kind of the life I thought he was going to live. 2 years later, and we've got Johnny Manziel, rehab, hitting his girlfriend, getting in trouble with the law, having the Browns deny about lying about his about being hungover instead of in the concussion protocol. What a weird story that was. It's becoming more and more the bizarro sports world with him and the Browns. And after a while, I know, people just sort of go, wow. But I'm trying to find, is there any point where this went wrong for this kid? And it's one of the reasons we got Mark Passwaters on the show, because we've talked to him about Johnny Manziel's career. We talked to him before the draft. We talked to him after the draft. And I want to know from a guy who told me, and this is Mark Passwaters, who told me a number of times on this show that this kid, while he was at College Station, was an incredibly hard worker and loved football and was dedicated to football and really went out of his way to go work hard to prove people wrong about him. Never once did that seem to show up in Cleveland. Maybe it showed up a little bit. There was a time where I think even Joe Thomas had said he was kind of starting to turn the corner a little bit. But for the most part, the second he arrived in Cleveland, he's been a controversial figure. And now you've got Kyle Allen, who followed Manziel at the quarterback position at Texas A&M, saying that the culture of Manziel led him to transfer to Houston. The whole, you can let anybody get away with anything, and as long as they win, it was okay, under Kevin Sumlin. And maybe that's just what Manziel needs. Maybe Manziel, if once his life is together, and he does get this domestic violence thing taken care of in terms of serving time or serving a suspension or however this plays out in both the law and the league, and it needs to play out in the law and the league. But once he is available to play again, maybe he needs a disciplinarian coach, but by then it might be too late. It just simply might be too late. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907, if you want to chime in on that. Mark Passwaters again, AggieL.com, coming up at the bottom of the hour. I started the show tonight talking about Cam Newton, talking about his response to the press conference fiasco where a lot of darts were thrown his way. And him saying he's not going to change or he's not going to be somebody he's not. In a way, it's similar to what's going on with Johnny Manziel. A lot of guys locked into a persona. I would tell young people all the time, don't be locked into a persona. You're 24, you're 25, you're 26. You shouldn't be locked into anything. You're not molded yet. Lord knows, if I acted the same way today as I did at 26 years old, I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't be married, I wouldn't have two kids, I don't even think I'd have a career. You can be nuts in your 20s. You're supposed to be nuts in your 20s. If we find mature athletes at 21, 22 years old, we're actually astonished that they're walking the earth. Look at Jordan Spieth on the PGA Tour. What's the one thing everybody says about him? My God, he's so mature. My God, he talks like a seasoned vet. He's 21 years old. You'd never get it by talking to him. It's more the exception to the rule than anything else, but that's really the way it's supposed to be. When Cam Newton says something along the lines of, I am this way and I don't conform, you know, I understand the mindset of that because I was once 26 years old. But I was lucky. I had a young, program director when in my early days in radio who said, you know what? You are going to have to change. You are going to have to adapt. You are going to have to do things differently and see things a lot differently because this is how this side works. Cam Newton, I think, will wake up one day and realize that that 26-year-old guy needs a talking to. And I hope that Johnny Manziel in his 30s looks at the 24-year-old him and does the same thing.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Oh, on the night of the New Hampshire primary, where the former owner of the New Jersey Generals wins the New Hampshire primary in Donald Trump. Yeah, you're too young. You don't remember the good times of the USFL. In fact, I'm barely old enough to remember the USFL. I remember Herschel Walker being on the cover of Sports Illustrated, though, when he signed with the New Jersey Generals. They also got Doug Flutie. Steve Young signed, like, some massive contract to play for the LA Express that I think paid him for many, many, many years. I think he was still getting checks from that well into his career after it had folded up. I guess his agent got him like some guaranteed money. Even after the league had folded, they still paid him the money that they owed him on the contract. The USFL, not bad. It was a spring league. Then they tried to go pro, and that was the end of that. The NFL squashed that like a bug. But Donald Trump was an owner of that league. In fact, a lot of people think he was the guy that ended up killing the USFL because he pushed hard for it to be a fall league to go up against the NFL. Now, it's funny because many people would think, oh, I mean, that's so stupid. Why would you go up against the NFL? You know, in the early 80s, it wasn't that far-fetched that you could make a run at the league. The league had went on strike in 1982, lost a lot of games. They had replacement players in 1987. There was a time in this country where the NFL was not the big stick that it carries now. But it certainly wasn't primed to be overthrown by a new upstart league right away, especially one that had only been in the league a few times. But they went out and got some good players. The idea that they got Herschel Walker out of college was crazy. But they did. And like I said, they got a number of guys. So Donald Trump wins the New Hampshire primary. 800-777-2907. So Adam, we were just talking in the last segment about our super predictions, our great predictions from the 2015 season. And I start thinking to myself, okay, if I'm going into the next year, what do I want the league to do differently? And I think you and I were talking about defining a catch.
Yes, 100%.
Was something we'd like the league to figure out. And I started thinking about the year because you and I were talking about 2015 wasn't a banner year for the league. There was a lot of bad football. There were a lot of not so good teams. There were a lot of not so good matchups. It's a down year. Yeah. I wouldn't put it on a pedestal and say this is really, you know, been really good. A lot of teams were flawed. I mean, the Super Bowl champion and the Denver Broncos had the strangest quarterback saga I think I've ever seen, but despite the fact that there were good, you know, a really good defense. But other than that, there were, you know, ups and downs. I mean, the Patriots couldn't secure home field advantage. And
I feel like if you took a fan, say like a college football fan, and you're like, they've never watched the NFL and you told them to watch this season, they would come away very unimpressed with the football that was played this season.
I agree. The one thing that it's because this is the big argument when it comes to the league dominance, right? The NFL it's the only pro football game in town, so it carries tremendous ratings and tremendous numbers, and you really can't kill the beast at all. But I will say that the league does need to know that despite the fact that it's getting, you know, record revenue and what all of this stuff, that it does have a game. It does need to keep refining. They have to continue to make the product better. They continue to have to sharpen it up a little bit. You can't get away with having bad officials. You can't get away with having a catch situation that nobody knows. Maybe it does take you tweaking the overtime rule a little bit. I'll tell you this. The fact that the NFL went into meetings and saw something that they didn't really like and wanted to change and actually did the right thing was when they looked at the kick, the extra point and said, let's fix that.
Yeah.
Good job. That's what we're talking about as fans. Not everything you do is going to be a home run if you're the NFL. You're not going to knock everything out of the park. There's going to be some tweaks and you may need to retweak some stuff. I didn't like the extra point rule when it first came out, but I will tell you, I'm 180 degrees different on it today. When it first was announced back in May, I said, this is a little too much for me. I don't know if I like this. I don't want to sweat the extra point. I'm already sweating enough half the time in a game. If my team is down 7, as soon as they cross that goal line, I'm assuming the extra point, and I believe at that moment the game is tied, even though an extra point is pending. I don't want to sweat the extra point. And I found out, you know what? Sweating the extra point is kind of cool. I kind of like it. It does add a tweak to the game. It does add something interesting. So good job. NFL, good job. But like I said, not everything they do is going to be knocked out of the park. You know the other thing I think they need to do? And this is going to be really, really hard for the league to do. And a lot of people have forgotten about this, but it is not off the table. The NFL has not given up on Deflategate. They are not done with that story. And they need to be done with that story. They do plan to continue the court stuff. They do want to make that suspension stick somehow. And if I was a league, I'd eat this and I'd end it. I would say, we tried, but you know what? We're going to move on from this. Now, I don't know if Roger Goodell wants to, because I think he doesn't want to set a precedent that he doesn't pursue his penalties that he goes to the mat for and gives them up because of a silly court ruling. But I think that is something that if I'm the NFL, I go into this offseason and I try to figure out how to calm that down or get rid of it and take that off the table. Because I find more and more people sort of looking back and going, you know, I'm not as mad at it as I thought I was going to be. Remember how people were just like, oh my God, Patriots should be banned from football. The whole organization needs to be stripped down. Brady should never play again. And then everyone went, yeah, I think I might have been overreacting a little bit. And then when Brady won in court, it was like, oh, okay, the NFL needs to figure out how to suspend him or do something. But that wasn't the case. If I'm the NFL, I gotta calm that down. Figure out the catch rule. Maybe tweak the overtime rule if you want. I think the NFL, they should not listen to the mob because of what happened in the Arizona-Green Bay playoff game. You don't have to change rule just because people don't like how that rule went down in terms of their entertainment.
I'm fine with the overtime rule.
I'm completely fine with it.
I kind of like it. It makes your defense step up if you don't win the coin toss.
Yeah, and I think when I hear people say it's an injustice, it's like, wait a minute. No, it's not an injustice because Aaron Rodgers didn't get the ball. You never had something taken away. You didn't have a scenario in which one team gets the ball and then the other team gets the ball and then that was taken away for this. You had a much worse system and then this made it a little bit better. But to say that it's a travesty, no, it's a little bit better. If you want to tweak it, tweak it. But don't tweak it because the pitchforks are out. The Green Bay Packers could have stopped the Arizona Cardinals. And then Aaron Rodgers would have gotten the ball. And I don't see a lot of touchdowns on the opening possession of overtime to me to think that it is some sort of problem in the OT frame. No, I see a lot of still field goals after a couple of possessions. So I don't know if the NFL has to tweak that. If you want to email or tweet your thoughts on what the NFL should do this offseason to make the game better, at Tony D Radio. We'll talk to Mark Passwaters next on Texas A&M.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio. Hey, thanks for joining us tonight. All right, two football players in the news and kind of both going in opposite direction. Von Miller is the Super Bowl MVP after a dominating defensive performance against the Carolina Panthers. And Johnny Manziel, who has kind of had his ups and downs and mostly downs in the 2 years that he has been in the league. Mark Passwaters covered both of these guys while both were at Texas A&M for Aggiel.com. And he joins us here on Yahoo Sports Radio. How are you, Mark?
Hey, Tony. How you doing?
Good. Let's start with Von Miller for a second. All right. He had his problems in the NFL with a PED suspension, but overall, he has been a real gem for the Broncos. In terms of a player at Texas A&M, what kind of player was he?
Well, when I first started covering him, it was his last two seasons when he really broke out. And he was a guy that was really friendly, lively, you know, he was majoring in poultry science, so you knew that, he was a perfect football player because he was a great athlete, an intense guy, a good teammate, but you knew that screw wasn't entirely tight, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He was a really great guy for us, but he had come a long way because when he first got to A&M, his first couple of seasons weren't exactly successful. He was probably best known for punching Michael Goodson out after Goodson stole his iPod his sophomore year. When Mike Sherman came in, they really had a heart-to-heart, and Sherman at one point told him, pulled him into his office and said, "Hey, I want you to look at the depth chart for next year. You're not on it." And he said, look, you have all the potential in the world, but you're slacking off. You're not being a good teammate. You're not getting it done in the classroom. You got two options here. You can either talk to yourself and get things straight, or you can transfer. And we love you. There will be no negative comments made. We'll let you transfer anywhere you want. And Von left the facility, packed his stuff, and started heading home, and he sent a message to his folks saying, I'm on my way. And he got up, probably up to around Hearn, which is about 40 miles north of College Station. His father sent him a message and said, "Get your bleep back to College Station." And, he went back to College Station, and, he really became very close to Mike Sherman and other members of that coaching staff and really turned himself around. And he went from being a guy that hadn't lived up to his potential, really didn't have a position, to becoming the joker in Tim DeRuiter's system, the attacking linebacker that you see today. And everything just clicked. The last two seasons he was at A&M, he was a great teammate, absolutely loves the university. Still, with all the thanks and giggums you've seen the last couple of days, you get the idea that, he really appreciates the support he had from the student body as a whole. And, he was just phenomenal his last 2 years. He was as good as any college defensive player I've ever seen.
Mark Passwaters joins us, Aggiel.com. All right, now for Johnny Manziel, all of the troubles that he's had in this league, you're a guy that really knows what he was like in college, and a lot of the stories that we got about Manziel in college. Mark, did you ever feel like this was a problem for him, or was he just, did you think he was just being a youthful kid?
I never saw this coming. I mean, you thought that there might be a problem with the partying a little bit. A little bit. Obviously, it was a concern when you get arrested before you're completed with your freshman year. But, I never saw him as a guy that would spiral this far out of control, where he's alleged to have beaten and essentially kidnapped his ex-girlfriend. It's a horrible situation. I'm very disappointed and very, very sad because, the kid that I knew, 3-4 years ago, he had his times when he was as nice a human being as there was in the world. And honestly, I don't know where that guy is right now.
I've been wondering myself because it is such an easy narrative to go, he's an immature kid, he needs to grow up. This kind of behavior just seems to me just self-destructive, that somebody has a personality that is just self-destructive. Was that at any time evident in the way he acted, maybe with the autograph thing or any of those other incidents that he had on campus, that he might have had a self-destructive kind of personality?
Well, I mean, when he was at A&M, certainly, getting arrested during his redshirt season was a bad indication. You know, you heard the stories about the partying and everything, even during his Heisman season, going out nights before games. You know, that you hear that a lot, though, about a lot of college football players. And you hear a lot about it, you know, even with NFL players. I mean, some people say that, you know, if social media had been around when Joe Namath was there, that Johnny couldn't have held his jock. I don't know whether that's true or, whether that's true or not. But it shows that, you know, this has been around for a long time. But the fact of the matter is, you know, whether or not you saw it or not at that point, the self-destructive nature is certainly showing itself now. He needs to get himself some help because before not only his professional career spirals away, but, you know, his life.
You told me once that Johnny Manziel was one of the hardest working guys on the team. Where do you think, Mark, that person has gone?
I wish I knew. I really do. I haven't talked to him in a while. I don't know very many people who have. And that's kind of the part of the disturbing aspect of all this.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that I always thought that would save him would be his love of football, you know, because that was the thing that when it came down to it, I figured that he would not want to be separated from that as opposed to anything else. And right now, obviously, that's very seriously in dispute because he's been suspended. He's been warned. He knows what the you know, he knows the situation that he's in. He's not a fool, but that hasn't been enough to stop him. And it's been the same things repeatedly, which means he's not getting the message through. You know, and at the end of the day, you know, you can blame, you know, the people on the outside can blame who they want. They can blame Kevin Sumlin and lack of discipline at A&M. Apparently Kyle Allen likes to bring that up now that he's at Houston. You know, you can blame his family, you bring his upbringing. We blame the Browns because they're a lousy organization and didn't oversee him. At the end of the day, it's Johnny Manziel's decision-making that's in question here. And it's Johnny Manziel who's destroying his life. And, you know, I'd really like to have the opportunity to have another phone call with him like we did 4 years ago, where I just started off with, Bubba, what the heck are you doing?
Yeah. It seems like this, I don't want to make this a simple issue. I know it's more, much more complex to what he's going through, but could he possibly benefit from a very authoritative coach that is really strong on discipline and more, I don't want to say father figure because I don't know what his life was like, but more of a guy that's really, really on top of him?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt. I would love it if there was a Joe Gibbs kind of guy out there right now that, you know, would basically, you know, that had the ability to, you know, reach him as a human being, be stern, but not necessarily be the yeller or screamer, but, you know, kind of set the great example. I don't know if there's a coach out there like that. Maybe Bill Belichick, but I can't see the Patriots wanting anything to do with him right now. Honestly, I can't see an NFL team right now that would want anything to do with him. Anybody. And, you know, you look at his talent, and you say that, and you look at so many lousy quarterback depth charts, that's how far he's fallen. And really, I think that what he would have to do to get back in the NFL right now is he would have to go and take all the steps that he needs to prove to an NFL front office that he really is serious, not only about being a professional quarterback, but being you know, a stable human being. And I don't think he's going to get a shot this year. I don't think that there's enough time between now and the free agency and the draft for him to do it all. He's going to have to go, and he's probably going to have to wrap this up as a completely lost season, get himself straightened out, and then hope somebody takes a flyer on it for 2017.
Mark Passwaters, great stuff as always, my friend. AggieYield.com is the website on Manziel, Von Miller, and Texas A&M. Appreciate it as always.
No problem, bud.
And it's tough with Johnny Manziel and the stories that we're hearing, and just the disappointment of a guy that we said earlier had the world on it in the palm of his hand and then blew it all and now is in a serious domestic abuse allegation against his girlfriend, 800-777-2907 is the telephone number as we roll along here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Coming up, more of the Super Bowl fallout next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us. So earlier tonight, we kind of did the state of the NFL. Now that the Super Bowl's been wrapped up and we head into the draft and the combine and all the offseason brouhahas. But if you're the league, if you're Roger Goodell, what's on your agenda to change? What would you want to see the league take care of? I said earlier, I think that they have to take Deflategate and flush it down the toilet and get on with it and not drag it through the mud. Maybe some of you like the idea of changing the overtime rule. I think they do need to find a catch. Steven in Ohio is next up on Yahoo Sports Radio. What's up, my man?
Hey, Tony. 140 characters just doesn't work to get my point across anymore.
No problem.
I've got some numbers here, and one of the things that I think needs eliminated or changed is kickoffs. Ever since they moved that ball up, we've seen so many touchbacks. And in fact, in 2015, I crunched the numbers, 2,099 total kickoffs in the NFL, only 800 of those 2,099 were returned. Over 1,220 of them were touchbacks. And, I mean, we've got guys kicking them into the stands anymore.
Now, whenever I watch a game in Denver, they never get returned.
Yeah, and that's, in fact, that's where most of the touchbacks are in Denver, obviously because of the air. But it seems like you've lost a little bit of the entertainment value of a kickoff, because it used to be, oh, watch the gunners running down the side and looking for those big hits. Now you can't have the big hits. You've got the halo rule. All of these other things have really taken that out. So just, we know the ball's going to get placed at the 20. Drop it at the 20, let's go. Eliminate the kickoffs. You got time saving, and you've eliminated some guys on the team that maybe could be put in different positions. So I think there's some changes to the kickoff rule that needs to be put in place.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. It seems like a wasted play if that's all we're going to do. If in the end, like the league should say, look, we find kick returns to be very, very dangerous. We don't really like them. So we're going to do this. We're going to move the kick up so most of the kickoffs are touchbacks. Well, don't be like on the fence with it. If you don't like them and don't want to do them, then find another way. And until coaches start seeing a strategic advantage to kick the ball like just short so that they could be returned and trying to figure out an advantage that way, which they won't. You're right. It seems like a wasted play every time.
Yeah. The only other thing that they can be used for really is the onside kick. And there were 50 of those used last year. So it's kind of pointless, it seems. The one other thing that I think needs change, and I know this is going to probably push some buttons with a lot of people, and I'm not sure what your opinion is, instant replay. It's got to go. I think it just completely either eliminated altogether or it's only used on scoring plays. And the reason I believe this is so many problems that we had with the officiating crews last year, I don't think there's any responsibility that lies on them too much. They get a play wrong, it's going to be reviewed. I think you have to put more of it back in hands. If the officials make this call, that's it. Live with it. Yes, there's some that are really questionable, but it's a game. It's all run by people. It's officiated by people. The only time it should be used is to check and verify a scoring play that may have been close.
You know what? You might be onto something with that. Steven, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. You might be onto something. It goes along the lines like this. And Adam, you're a baseball guy, so you tell me if this is what you've heard too. There's been like this sort of underground push to get, like in baseball, to get balls and strikes. Like, we could set up sensors and you could have balls and strikes called. But if you overruled umpires, they lose their eye for what they need to know. You eventually just lose the ability, or the ability fades away. You know what? We have this actual problem in everyday life. When I was a kid, I knew every phone number of every single person that I needed to know the phone number for. So my best friend from school, I memorized the phone number. My dad's work, I memorized the phone number. My mom's work, I memorized the phone number. Right? I even in high school, I knew all of these phone numbers. I can still remember phone numbers of kids that I went to school with. I don't remember, I don't know my wife's phone number. I barely know my phone number.
I know two numbers, my own and my grandparents' number from growing up that my grandpa actually has still with his phone.
Yeah. In fact, my four-digit code at the gym is the last four numbers of my phone number when I was a kid, just because I like that, because I like the fact that I remembered my phone number when I was like 7 years old. I don't know any numbers now.
No.
I don't know how to get in touch with anybody. I barely know the number to get to I don't know anybody's number. Technology has allowed me to forget phone numbers. So I think Stephen is on to something here. If you have the eye in the sky that is able to override everything, then there is no need for you to be sharp at what you do. It's not direct. Guys don't purposely try to do that. But it just is, it's like evolution. It just becomes something you're not as good at as you were before, because the eye in the sky is always going to be there. We have to decide as a sports fan what's important. Is getting every single call correct the most important thing that we're willing to give up a little time? Are we willing to make games longer? Are we willing to let technology invade the human element of the game? For some of you, absolutely. For some of you, I'm assuming Steven is on that side, where it just doesn't seem to be, it kind of takes the ebb and flow of the game away. And I agree a little bit here. I, for one, in baseball, I like the human element in baseball. It bothers me. It really rips me. I hate some of the decisions, but I don't need a baseball game going 4 hours because we have to stop on every single thing. Any type of bang bang play.
Yeah, I mean, especially with baseball, I love the fact that you have to basically plan for what umpire you have behind the plate.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
this
exactly.
guy you know has a little outside zone, so you got to pitch more outside because that works to your advantage. So it's just, you know, But football, that's tough. Yeah, I can see his point.
I can see his point, too. But again, it also, look, I hate to admit this. I've been following this league since I was a kid. I got to be honest with you. I don't even know what's reviewable and what's not reviewable half the time. I hear that all the time. Well, that's not reviewable. And I go, why not?
Yeah.
All the time I do that. So I'm not even sure they really know what they're doing. We'll continue this conversation next hour. Yahoo Sports Radio.